Hi, everybody, and good evening, good night, whatever it is for you. It's about 2 a.m. here, but I still am continuing under this impression during the Waysack time. It's a time when the energy of Shambhala is particularly available to the worldwide group. And supposedly, I think some perceptions that are more of a unitive nature and which relate more to isolated unity enter the consciousness, are more accessible to the consciousness. And so I have used this opportunity to begin this series of adventures in identification. I'm simply thinking with you, thinking with myself as I go about some of these deeper matters which are so often buried beneath our interplay with our environment, buried by the customary energy circuits of our energy system, whether physical, etheric, or astral, or lower mental, and perhaps even higher mental, buried. And yet ever implicate, inherent, resident within all that we attempt to do and to understand. We spent quite a bit of time, the last programs which Brett is kindly breaking, attempting to break into smaller units. Sometimes I simply go through because it's better to do it that way for the continuity of my own thought, breaking them into approximately 1 hour segments. They should be easier to handle. And of course, I'll be working, picking up the esoteric astrology adventures, of which there are about, I suppose by now, 80 1 hour segments, something like that. There's a lot to think about, a lot to understand more deeply, and I think that if we think together about these things in an unhurried way, you'll notice my words here are a lot slower than they are when I'm dealing with astrology, because this is a still deeper subject, perhaps, for which insufficient words have been devised. So we have to not only think, but penetrate quite deeply as we think. Not an easy task. We dealt with Formula 3 last time, the six conditioning thoughts, which are the seed of all philosophies and which go forth as trumpeted words on certain musical notes and appear as symbols, all of which DK will not give us, and I'm sure for good reason. But in terms of meaning, we can approach. And I just want to read those again. I said plenty about them in the last program. This is program number 5, I suppose, that I'm beginning with. And I have memorized these and find it very useful to reaffirm the essence of things. They are very compact. I do, begin to wonder about the notes on which they are found. And as I've said, of course, if they were all the seven notes in the way we usually divide the scale, we would have seven statements, but we have six, and six is the number of Shambhala. Shambhala ciphers out to 24, which is a six, and interestingly enough, it has within it the two and four, which are two of the major rays, I think, of our solar system, with our solar logoic personality on the second ray, the solar logoic soul on the second ray, and perhaps at this time the solar logoic monad on the fourth ray. The human monad does not change except in the next eon. Is an eon a solar system? Does the solar logoic monad change? Well, we seem to be a heart of love, a consuming fire of love in this solar system. And it is my thought that monadic rays must eventually resolve, even though there are seven, onto the first, second, or third ray. The layout in a treatise on cosmic fire, I guess I can go just to the ordinary map. Whoops. I think that's not so good. Let's see if I can try this again. Whoa. Okay. I'll pause for a moment. I'm getting a strange sound. So I'll just pause this and get back in business here. Okay, we're resuming recording. I think I tried something that was a little bit risky. I'm sure that some of you have had difficulty with the AAB CD-ROM, and what I try to do is not to have to use the actual CD itself, but to use an image of the CD, but that, of course, can at times go out, and frequently it does. So then I have to mount it again. But I was speaking about the resolution of the seven monadic rays onto three rays, and here we have seven major centers on the monadic plane of the cosmic physical plane, and notice how when we arrive at that point of tension we call the logoic plane, or sea of fire, that there are only three centers, which pretty well can be considered the three persons of the logoic trinity, and it says here the three logoi, interestingly enough. Notice that? Can you see that? The three logoi. I don't know how clearly one can see that, but I think there it is, three logoi. These, I believe that each one of us is a monad, once becoming a liberated monad, as I believe the Christ is and the Buddha is, we will inhere in one of these major monadic centers, either as a first, second, or third ray. So I think this is our major monadic ray, whatever may be our sub-monadic ray. I used to think that both of the monadic rays were on the monadic plane. But now I've come to adjust my thought. Trouble is, it's hard to keep up with those writings that one has made and to correct or revise according to one's present thought. But anyway, I believe that we inhere within one of these as a liberated monad or a liberated volatile essence. But from the point of view of the monadic plane, we are focused in one of the seven categories for which the Blessed One stanzas, or to which the Blessed One stanzas in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, relate directly. And the first three stanzas, I think, can also relate to the first three monadic rays from a still higher perspective, as these are liberated monads. Liberated not yet from the cosmic physical plane, but nevertheless liberated from the monadic vehicle, I would think. All these ideas can be adjusted in time. One offers speculations. So I want to read again what we went through last time because it is such a basis for all we do, especially in these studies of identification, unification, oneness, synthesis, homogeneity. All of these words are, important. I'm going to make a copy. Okay. Make a copy of this. And I want to bold it, because it stands out more powerfully. Yeah, there it is. Okay. God is. The Lord for A stands firm. Being exists alone. Naught else is. Time is. Being descends to manifest. Creation is. Time, then, and form agree. Being and time do not agree. Unity is. The one between comes forth and knows both time and God. But time destroys that middle one, and only being is. Space is. Time, I'm sorry, yeah, space is. Time and space reverberate and hide the one who stands behind. Pure being is, unknown and unafraid, untouched for A, unchanged. God is time, space, the middle one, with form and process go, and yet for A remain, pure reason then sufficeth. Being cries forth and says untranslatable, death crumbles all, existence disappears, and yet for A remains. Untouched, immutably the same. God is. Even by reading this, just suppose we read this daily and even just entered into it for a minute or two. It would establish within our consciousness a deeper level of perception, something that would be very important. We are very busy disciples. We work hard in service. We are emulating our superiors as we do so. I like a story I've heard. Is it a true story? I don't know, but it's said to be a true story. Of Master Moria rushing into a room, taking off one hat, putting on another, and rushing out. Sounds like he was active in his duties, and we are as well. But we have to take time for that which is the most important. We have to do that. And then I think we will find that we are, excuse me, I'm just checking my microphone level here. Seems to be okay. So many things that one has to look after in this electronic age, and this is nothing compared to a real audio engineer. So we want to establish a foundation in being. Being is the raw fact. It is, there are many ways in which things express various qualities and combinations of qualities. Seven major qualities and many combinations based upon those seven. And in addition, add to that the incredible number of astrological combinations, and those items or contents of consciousness which we identify as beings or as things, they all express a certain quality, even, let us say, unique quality. But they have one thing in common, which is beyond quality. And that is the very fact that they are. That they are perceived. Because in a way, as I've often said, to be is to be perceived. I suppose I number myself then with certain of the idealistic philosophers who have asserted that idea, which seemed to me 50 years ago so strange, and yet I begin to understand that at least to be within cosmos is to be perceived by the one life of cosmos, and that is a form of perception, which I think must be self-perception. Excuse me. Now, the next thing I would like to take up is this stanza, quite an amazing stanza. And it is found in Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1. And I'd like, again, to bold this because it's so magnificent. I have memorized this one, too, as I would recommend that you do for anything that is really important to you. What DK says, he calls it discipleship and its end. This is curious, but the end of discipleship, well, you know, there is no real end of discipleship. The soul of Logos is a disciple of the Logos of Sirius. Sirius is itself a disciple of a cosmic logos working through seven major cosmic logoi, and on it goes. The ladder of discipleship extends all the way to the one God of the universe, which is his own self-perception. But from the human point of view, what we normally call discipleship ends in the state of being an initiate, a true initiate, one who has entered into a point of tension where, in which unity, connectedness, oneness, even synthesis, is always perceivable and even beable. I think that word beable should be looked into, because I think that's what we're looking for. We're looking for something beyond meaning. We're looking for participation, belonging, and beability. I heard a paraphrase of something Joseph Campbell had said. He says, what we're looking for is not the meaning of life, but the experience of being alive. This is a profoundly wise statement. Joseph Campbell, illustrating himself, certainly as some kind of initiate, you know. Whether of the second degree or even of the third degree is hard to say. He was, by sun sign, an Aries, and I think Scorpio. I would have to look that up. But I think Scorpio was his rising sign. And You know, it is in Aries, the pursuit of being becomes a major life issue for certain types of people. Just as it is at this time of my life for me. And what I'm trying to do, you know, it's been a lifelong pursuit in many ways. I'm trying to share that with you as much as I possibly can, realizing that, you know, it was shared with me in a way, but I had to find my own way. And of course, you will have to find your own way too. All one can do is indicate a little bit. Well, here I thought I had him, Joseph Campbell. Yes, I have him. That's good. No, I'm glad I looked it up. It is Libra. That is his rising sign. With the moon in Leo, you know, the hero with a thousand faces, the whole idea of what is really the identity of man and how many archetypes he can display in his deeper identity, and what an amazing combination of the Sun, Mercury, and Jupiter together, all within a degree. It certainly does expand the mind marvelously. And, well, not to get sidetracked here, but Venus is in Pisces, you know, showing a very deep love nature as the ruler of the ascendant. So he certainly was in pursuit of the archetypes and of the life, I think, which lay behind and within the archetypes. He was a very wise individual and dramatic in his own way with that elevated Leo moon and the power of Aries. He had a very strong fire trine operating here between Sun, Mercury, Jupiter, and the moon in Leo. So the whole energy of identity was powerful in his nature. And we can see him with a revolutionary type of mind, Uranus in the third house, and with the mystic quest in the ninth house of higher mind and mysticism. He had a revolutionary perspective, Uranus, the esoteric ruler of the ascendant. But you know, this is not a course on astrology. It's not really a course on anything. It's simply reflections. Yet I can't seem to help it because astrology is so integral to my thought that one thing leads to another, and before long, I am bringing the astrological threads into the discussion. So in any case, the discipleship, as we customarily think of it, ends at the third degree, when one becomes a true initiate, at least in the human curriculum. One is the merest disciple, almost a probationary disciple with respect to the Lodge on Sirius when one is a third degree initiate. One is perhaps, well, still on probation, but still having passed an important test at the fourth degree with respect to Sirius. So one can at least call oneself a disciple. And at the first degree, one is a humble entered apprentice in the lodge on Sirius. Of course, our first degree initiates are still disciples and not even necessarily accepted disciples. So perhaps one has to go on a bit more to be an accepted disciple, maybe sometime between our fifth and sixth initiations, if the analogy holds good, one can be an accepted disciple, begin one's accepted discipleship with respect to Sirius. And sometimes accepted discipleship does not come until one is a second degree initiate, which would be, with respect to Sirius, our sixth or monadic initiation. And finally, when one is as are the Christ and the Buddha, seventh degree initiates, or at least in process there, they are becoming true initiates, making application to the third degree with respect to the lodge on Sirius. All these things have to be sorted out with accuracy, but what they do give us is a marvelous, expansive vision which draws us onward and inspires us and shows us there's so much more to aspire to than conventionally enters the consciousness, or shall we say enters the conventional consciousness. Above all, as is stated in Agni Yoga, let us not have a conventional consciousness. Let us break through the conventionalities of thought, those pre-formed thoughts which we constantly entertain and which have insufficient depth to reveal reality. We can see that Joseph Campbell, with his Uranus in the third house, the esoteric ruler of Libra and the hierarchical ruler of his Aries stellium, was certainly bringing certain new configurations of thought. We might even consider transfigured thought to humanity. The Tibetan says here, there is a curious and ancient Atlantean chant, which is no longer used, but in those far-off times was chanted by the initiate who took the third initiation, the consummating initiation of the period, of the Atlantean period. Perhaps it was not possible to go beyond the third initiation. The Buddha was said to have reached the capacity for the third initiation at the end of the moon chain, but since at that time it was not available to him, he came into our present chain, the earth chain, and there, in Atlantean times, took the third initiation in a fourth ray ashram, as did the Christ. It would seem that even then, they must have been companions along the way. It goes as follows. The translation of the symbols in which it was written necessitates the loss of rhythm and potency. Well, in some ancient Atlantean language, millions of years old, that rhythm and potency will exist. And Master DK may be one of those who can understand and speak that language. At least it would seem he would have to in order to be able to translate this for us. So, you know, in a coming seventh ray, fourth ray age, there will be a return of rhythm and symbolic understanding. Fourth ray, with its connection to the Buddhic plane, gives a very strong ability to render cosmic etheric impression or Buddhic impression into symbol, or to take a thus rendered symbol and contemplate it in such a way that the Buddhic significance appears. So these things lie ahead of us when we are truly and habitually focused within the higher mind and beyond. Meanwhile, we have many struggles to extricate ourselves from the myopic, glamorous, and illusory distractions which veil these deeper modes of perception. I'm going to read the whole thing through, and then I'm not sure how long this will take me. The hour, oh yes, the hour is late. I was not able to start on this, and I'm quite determined to find my way through, a little bit at least, while the WASAC period is on. Okay, I am the one I got. That's how I locate this. That is, for me, such a meaningful statement. This is on page 679 and 678. I stand between the heavens and earth. I vision God. I see the forms God took. I hate them both. Naught do they mean to me. For one I cannot reach, and for the lesser of the two, I have no longer any love. Torn am I. Space and its life I cannot know, and so I want it not. Time and its myriad forms I know too well. Pendant I hang betwixt the two, desiring neither. God from high heaven speaks. There is a change. I hear with ear attentive, and listening turn my head. That which I visioned, yet visioning could not reach, is nearer to my heart. Old longings come again, yet die. Old chains of glamour snap. Forward I rush. Myriads of voices speak and halt me in my tracks. The thunder of the sounds of earth shuts out the voice of God. I turn me on my forward path and vision once again the long-held joys of earth and flesh and kin. I lose the vision of eternal things. The voice of God dies out. Torn again am I. Torn again am I, but only for a little time. Backward and forward shifts my little self, e'en as a bird soars into heaven and settles back again upon the tree. But God in his high place outlasts the little bird. Thus do I know that God will victor be, and later hold my mind and me in thrall. Hark to the joyous paean that I chant. The work is done. My ear is deaf to all the calls of earth, except to that small voice of all the hidden souls within the outer forms. For they are as myself. With them, I am as one, at one. God's voice rings clear, and in its tones and overtones, the little voices of the little selves, the little voices of the little forms, dim and fade out. I dwell within a world of unity. I know all souls are one. Swept am I by the universal life, and as I sweep upon my onward way, the way of God, I see all lesser energies die out. I am the one, I God. I am the form in which all forms are merged. I am the soul in which all souls are fused. I am the life, and in that life, all little lives remain. These words, says DK, chanted in the ancient formulas on particular and selected notes, were most potent and brought definite results in certain ancient ceremonies that have long since died out. Well, early Atlantean times occurred, DK tells us, 12 million years ago. If these were Middle Atlantean times, we could be speaking of 6, 5, 4 million years ago. I think Philip Lindsay in his Hidden History of Humanity probably has the best idea of when these eras took place, and we have to be grateful to him for clarifying these cyclic matters in a way that can make sense to us. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, let's see, how's it go? Well, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4. I have to learn to count here. 1, 2, 3, 4. Torn again am I. 5, 6, 7, 8. Well, we don't know whether it is so, but we have the octave of 8 notes, in which the beginning or fundamental note is the same at half the vibrational speed as the highest or 8th note. So we have possibly all the notes of the scale upon which these stanzas could be chanted. Not that they are necessarily in order. That we don't know, but one day it will be revealed to us. They are very powerful somehow, even powerful in their meaning without the note and without the ancient language for its rhythmic value. I stand between the heavens and the earth. I assume I am the disciple. In this case, the disciple facing really the first real initiation, the third initiation, in which the third eye opens sufficiently to be in constant contact with the presence and the unity of things. What are the heavens? What is earth? Well, I don't think that this individual is yet focused perpetually within the causal body. The causal body exists in what we might call the third heaven, but then there's the fourth heaven, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh heaven of the logoic plane. I think this is the way we can think of heavens. So there was that statement attributed to St. Paul by the Tibetan, where Paul was speaking of the third heaven as it reflects the seventh. And that seventh heaven could very well be liberation onto the logoic plane, as that is reflected in the monadic nature, and even to a degree in the central fire of the jewel in the lotus. Within the lotus there is a volatile essence, and within that jewel, although the jewel is well formed and probably seven faceted, I think that is what the Tibetan tells us, there is a central fire. The jewel itself is more related to the monadic plane, with the sevenfold structures that are found upon the monadic plane. But the central fire, I think, is related to the sea of fire. So St. Paul, being from all reasonable inference, a first-ray monad, a first-ray fifth-ray monad, I would say. Perhaps intuited something of this, the origin of the central fire, and he felt a peculiarly powerful type of divine will within the very center of his egoic nature. I stand between the heavens and earth. Well, from one point of view, the heavens can be our egoic nature, and the earth can be the lower 18 subplanes, which are the expression of the dense physical vehicle of the planetary logos. And where would that standing occur? Let's take a look here. Could be right there on the fourth subplane of the mental plane, which is in a way just between the heavens here and the planes of Earth below. Now, from another and higher perspective, and does this potential initiate know it? The heavens are the cosmic ethers themselves, and the earth is in a way all the 21 lower subplanes. So perhaps the day will come when we are so focused upon the higher mental plane that we are indeed between the heavens, which are the cosmic ethers, and the earth, which are the earth, which is comprised of 21 lower subplanes, which is the expression of the dense physical body of the solar logos. Where does this potential initiate stand? I think probably in the mind and on the within the point of tension we call the mental unit. I stand between the heavens and earth. I vision God. Well, he doesn't know God. He visions. The vision is not yet the revelation. It is the precursor of the revelation of the divine. So through the creative imagination, this would be initiate visions. God has some image of what God must be, has the faith, the kind of touching of that higher substance which faith allows, but it's still somewhat imaginative, imaginary. So on one hand, he looks above, he visions God. I see the forms God took. Now, these forms are not just the forms of the very lowest planes. They are something that exists on all the planes of personality. And maybe this individual is beginning to understand that the egoic sphere is a form as well. The egoic lotus, the wheel with its spokes is a form. And yet, since he is not yet a third degree initiate, he is not yet permanently polarized on the higher mental plane. But we're not just dealing with the forms that are specifically material and concrete. There are many, many forms. And the forms that God took are found on all the 18 lower subplanes, as well as the higher mental plane, the egoic lotus. So it's, in a way, it's as if God is found on the higher ethers, the realm of the monad, because when we speak of God, we speak of that immanence of God within ourselves, which really is the monad. And the forms God took are found on the 21 subplanes below, but especially on the lower 18, with the egoic lotus operating in an interim position. I see the forms God took. I hate them both. This is strong language. Vision is not God, and one is out of reach. That which God seems to be is out of reach, and all these forms are disgustingly familiar. So the law of repulse, you might say, the fourth law of the soul, is operating in two directions. It is rejecting the many forms, which he understands are the forms God took, because what else is there but God? And how can anything be created of any substance except the substance of God itself? So there's a double rejection, a double vision, and a double rejection. And I suppose there is a point in the development of the individual, I suppose sometime between the second and third initiation, where there is a kind of Plutonic disgust with the past, and yet a longing for the future, and for the higher divinity which cannot yet be fulfilled, and so a kind of despair and a rejection of those highest possibilities which arises from despair. I hate them both. Naught do they mean to me. It's really strong rejection. They are not intimate to him. He has transcended one and cannot reach the other. As it says, for one I cannot reach, not yet, even though in a way it is within him. For one I cannot reach, and for the lower of the two, I have no longer any love. Thousands of lives have been spent in loving those contents of consciousness which are formal. Not just the outer forms on the dense physical plane, but other energy configurations as well. Visions and ideals and dreams, one can love those, and they are found on the astral plane, and one can love one's thoughts on the lower mental plane. One can fall in love with one's thoughts on the higher mental plane in the integration formula for the third ray. It tells us all about this. Love of truth must dominate, and not the love of my own thoughts and forms. Love of the ordered process must control, not love of my own wild activity. So the third ray type, and in a way all human beings who are still captivated by the personality, are generically under the third ray. So here we have a position of being between two great forces, one representing in a way the third ray and the note fa and the past and that which is established already upon our planet and in our solar system, and the other a higher type of realization involving first the second and then the third ray. So it is the condition of man being on the fourth ray, always to be between. And eventually man will settle and focus upon the Buddhic plane, and then harmonization would occur. And at that time, all of humanity perhaps will be focused on the second ray in its soul and on the fourth ray in its personality, which will attune it to the pure reason of the Buddhic plane and to the harmonization there to be found between that which is above and that which is below. Torn am I, torn I am. Space and its life I cannot know. Well, we don't just mean outer space, we mean the formless worlds, I suppose. It's as if to say I cannot know the cosmic ethers. I cannot know these arupa worlds where life, in the solo logoic sense, really begins. On the lower 18 subplanes or lower 21 subplanes, it's as if we're not really alive. We are very much buried by the energy patterns and vibrations of a previous solar system. It's not really life. It's a form of submersion, immersion, suffocation. That's what we're in at the moment. Though the rays do come through, the rays of life, and animate us, and we begin to breathe as if something higher. When we have a really good meditation, a really good service, as we often have here in Finland, in our Temple of Silence, very uplifting, it's as if the rays of life come through and can be breathed in, and something of the reality of life on the cosmic ethers can be sensed, intuited. Space and its life I cannot know, and so I want it not. Well, it's a bit like sour grapes, isn't it? It is a dramatic, you know. These may have been dramatic rituals. Hercules, after all, was teaching in this time, we are told, and he taught through various dramas. So sometimes we exaggerate in order to make the teaching point. There's a bit of pessimism here. He says he cannot know it. Well, many of us as aspirants and disciples feel indeed we can know, even though we do not yet know. But perhaps just for the sake of the drama, the repudiation goes on. And so I want it not. Deep down, he really wants it. I feel like the fox and the sour grapes are analogous to this situation. If you can't reach it, I don't want it. But later, he wants it, of course. Time and its myriad forms. Remember time? Remember from the second stanza of the six great statements in Formula 3, time then and form agree. Being and time do not agree. Time and its myriad forms I know too well. Ah, satiation, disgust, too much familiarity, all attraction for the familiar worn out. Family and the familiar, if you think about it, the lunar lords basically coming under the sign Cancer, or integrated under the sign Cancer, which is the fourth sign, there being four lunar lords, three lower vehicles and their synthesis under Cancer. It's what is familiar, the familiar self, the family. Well, we have to break beyond that familiarity. We have to break beyond the familiar family. We have to break into the true family, which is the family of souls. DK has told us we have physical families, we have emotional and mental families. We also have soul families. I suppose wherever there is a vehicle, we have an aggregation we can call a family. But we have to move beyond the familiar here, don't we? Time and its myriad forms I know too well. Pendant I hang betwixt the two, you know, betwixt the higher and the lower pairs of opposites, quite in despair, desiring neither. Now let me These old commentary verses all bear on each other. So I'm going to go over here to Esoteric Psychology 2 and show you what happens under the law of repulse. Probably know this, but it's under the sixth ray. And the frenzied followers running along. The frenzied follower is running along, but finds he cannot reach that which he desires. So he's rushing along his tunnel, and here is what had light, a shutter seemed to close. The vision he had seen no longer shone. The follower stumbled in the dark. DK has a word for all of these types who experience the law of repulse. In the case of the sixth ray, it's the follower. For the third ray, it's the weaver, and for the fourth ray, it's the mixer, and for the fifth ray, it's the worker, and the seventh ray, it's the magician, and the second ray, it's the scholar. And I forget what it is for the first ray. It doesn't specify it in the same way. Okay. So the life ended, and the world of thought was naught. Pendant, he seemed. He hung with naught below, before, behind, above. To him, naught was. It's just the same, isn't it? That's really what we're seeing here. He's in that condition of despair. Well, we're getting, I've only made it through two of these verses. Time in its myriad forms I know too well. Pendant I hang, just as he hung in the sixth ray law of repulse, betwixt the two, desiring neither. So we have this rejection. This is how it all starts. This is the condition. Divine discontent, reaching for that which one thinks one cannot reach, disgusted with that which one has already experienced during the 777 symbolic incarnations. So I'll just read those, and then in our next program, we'll come back to it. I stand between the heavens and earth. I vision God. I see the forms God took. I hate them both. Naught do they mean to me. For one I cannot reach, and for the lower of the two I have no longer any love. DK does give us the iambic rhythm. I've always felt he was a poet of some kind. Torn am I. Space in its life I cannot know, and so I want it not. Time in its myriad forms I know too well. Pendant I hang betwixt the two, desiring neither. So in our next discussion, which will be Adventures in Identification number 6, I'll use the Great Invocation now, we will pick up where we left off in the middle of this ancient Atlantean stanza. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. from the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, we've been at it just about a little more than an hour, trying to keep these programs in a manageable length. So we'll move on to the third verse of this ancient Atlantean chant the next time we get together, whether it's in a few minutes or tomorrow. Till then.